This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good, usually. But today, we have something a little different for you.
My name is Gabriel Urbina, and I am your first Bad Ideas host.
My name is Sarah Shackett. I'm your second Bad Ideas host.
And my name is Zach Valenti, your third Bad Ideas host.
And we are joined once again here at Bad Ideas HQ remotely by one half of the amazing team behind Horse, the mastermind behind the new show, Next Stop. It's Mr. Eric Silver from Multitude.
Hello, it's me.
Hi.
The crowd goes wild.
Eric, thank you so much for coming back on the show. Thank you for being here. Thank you for agreeing to be our interview guinea pig, because we have so many things that we want to know about this new show that you've done and that you have created and kind of shepherded into existence.
I cannot believe it exists, and please ask me everything because I have a lot of thoughts. I've been thinking about it for like 15 months and I just want to talk to other people about it.
Well, before we get specifically into Next Stop, I'm curious, Eric, how does it feel to be more podcast than person these days?
Well, I'm glad the secret government organization that kidnapped me and implanted podcast directly into my body to make me a new evolution of humanity. I think they're really getting what they signed up for.
Homo sapiens podcastius.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I have four active podcasts going right now, and I'm not sure how I managed to get myself in that situation, but it's just,
I mean,
like,
it's lucky that the world broke down. Because
yeah,
otherwise,
it's great. Well, everyone's listening to the Joe Rogan podcast instead, so
yeah.
I don't even know what I'm doing. But yeah, I have four active podcasts right now. I have Join the Party, our Dungeons and Dragons game, which has started our second campaign. Horse, which is the show I do with Mike Schubert about basketball. Everything about basketball except for the actual wins and losses. We just talk about beefs and drama and stuff. I have a show that I started just during the quarantine called What's Your Favorite Pokemon? And Then I Say Something Nice About You, where it's just like, hey, let's think about Pokemon for like 30 minutes instead of anything else. And now Next Stop, this sitcom that I wrote like a year ago and we worked on all throughout December and January, and now is coming out. It's pretty wild. There's a lot happening.
So let's talk a little bit about this new baby in your podcasting family. What is, for anyone that hasn't tuned in yet, kind of like, what is the elevator pitch for Next Stop?
Sure. Next Stop is a audio sitcom. It is a love letter and riff on the 90s sitcoms and early 2000s sitcoms that I loved so much, but made for the 21st century and for podcasts. It's a slice of life sitcom. It's about the real stuff that you go through in your mid and late 20s when your friends are getting married and moving away and you're like, am I doing all right? I hope that what I'm doing is the right thing. And it's also funny at the same time.
Good. Yeah, just sort of that like crossroads of, oh God, am I doing my life right? But also hilarity.
Yeah, I from both podcasting and just like comedy and sitcoms in general, there's not a lot that focuses on the late 20s time. There's like Girls and like college stuff that focuses on like, and high school, of course, focuses on your early 20s when you're making mistakes. And then like everything on CBS is just like, I'm in my 30s and I have a family and it's hard.
Right.
So, but, and then everything else is just kind of like amorphous in the middle. Like you could never really know how old like the people on Friends or How I Met Your Mother or all these people were, because like they could have been anywhere from like 23 to 32 at any time.
I was just thinking that about Friends kind of has an episode where they finally kind of address, like, I think it's Rachel turns 30. But before that point, they could have really been anywhere between 22 and 30, and it would have felt like, yeah, sure, like whatever number you said would have made sense, because it's treated as such a like weird amorphous blob of time.
Right. It was just like the time in everyone's lives, but because everyone was at like different times in their lives, it just like doesn't really matter how old they were. It's like just about how they were relative to each other and how they knew each other. Like in the first episode of Friends, I think Rachel could have been anywhere from literally 22 to 26, but she could have been that naive and like it wouldn't have mattered.
Right.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing that you have to do, I suppose, when you don't know how long you're going to run.
Yeah.
And so if you have like amorphous, just vaguely 20 something people, you can have them turn 30 in season 8 or season 6 or season 10, and it's all fine. So I'm curious, Eric, like, did you sort of have like a beginning to end vision with this idea, or do you sort of know like the story that you want to tell with these people, or are you still trying to figure it out?
I think I'm going season by season, just the way that podcasting goes. It's like I'm seeing them as really discrete parts. I knew that I needed to have the inciting incident. So Cam and Allie, who are two roommates, their third roommate, Jillian, gets engaged. So her and her fiance move in together. So they're looking for the third roommate. And that is like the iconoclast Samuel Clemens, who just moved to the city and is just like
the unforgettable person. Samuel Clemens.
I love him so much. Both the character and Ian, who is his actor, it warms my heart. It's just like, you know, what if Barney Stinson wasn't a giant asshole and was just your friend?
Right.
What a concept.
It's like, what if Sheldon Cooper wasn't a massive douchebag and was actually just a nice person who was weird? You know, like
who
friends
has some quirks.
You have. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I can attest how charming Ian is.
So,
and I never could have guessed the amazingness of voice that would come out of that sweet face.
The actor, Ian, I cannot remember Ian's last name, but I'll give it to you later. The funny thing about Ian, the guy who played Samuel Clemens, we gave him like two notes the entire recording time. He's just like, he embodied this goofy, like really strange person with all this such warmth. And just like, this is just how I am. And I don't know any different of that. I'm a weird person. Because also like what I said about this being a love letter and deconstruction of sitcoms is like I'm taking tropes from sitcoms and really breaking them apart. So there is always like Barney Stinson, like Sheldon Cooper, this weirdo who then becomes like the catchphrase of the season, like the catchphrase guy. But also like, what if this was a real person, but you're slowly like revealing new things about them because they just like have other things. This could also be in How I Met Your Mother, how they treated Robin, because we slowly learn more and more about her because she's new. So I like the idea of revealing more, but in a very like organic way. Like this is how you learn about another person. Sometimes you just need to ask them what's happening. Like no one's going to give you like a Robin Sparkles VHS. Like you're just going to be like, hey, Samuel, what do you do for work? And he's going to be like, it's really hard to explain. And then you're like, okay, I guess that's a weird thing about my roommate. Like it's all right.
So how did the idea for the show come about? Did you start from a place of I want to create a sitcom and sort of found the characters from there? Did it begin with the people in it? What was the genesis of the show?
All right, well, here is the apocryphal story, which actually happened, but I do like calling it apocryphal. The year was 2019. It was this was like January 2019. And I
the
was
glory
out,
days.
Yeah, right. I was hanging out at KCBC, which is this like brewery bar in Brooklyn. With Amanda and Brandon, two of my co-patriots at Multitude, but also who I work on Join the Party with. And we were just hanging out, and Brandon does this thing where he says something out loud, and then I'm like, that's stupid. And then, like, a week later, I come back and do it. Because it's like a grain of salt, like, rattling around in my brain. And then it's like, oh, now it's this, like, fucking... Not that my brain produces pearls, but I'm like, it just rattles around in there and then becomes something else. So we're all just standing there and we're drinking, and Brandon's just like, you know, like there aren't a lot of sitcoms, like Friends sitcoms in podcasting. Like we should do that. I'm like, no, that's dumb. don't, that's dumb, Brandon. You're dumb. Never come up with anything ever again. And then like a week later, I sent him a script and I was like, fuck you. I came up with the whole thing. And it's like, it was a fun challenge. I really, my skill, I feel like as a writer is that when I want to do something, I do it and then I do it quickly.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like a short order, like cook in that way. Like I like being a diner style writer where I'm just like, I'm going to do this and it's going to exist. And that's something that I kind of pride on myself. I don't know. That's like, I just kind of like that about myself. And I just like this thing came out of me because recently one of my friends had moved to Los Angeles and he left with only like 2 weeks. He gave us like 2 weeks notice and he set up like literally eight roommate dates like in a row. And I remember this and I was like, this is annoying, but like I'm still living my life here while he's probably doing this big thing by moving to Los Angeles. So I'm like, it's be nice to tell the story of what happens when like there's a hole and then what fills that hole in a friendship and in a like a roommate sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then it kind of went from there.
Now you're the only writer on the show, right? Like, is it all you?
Oh yeah. It's all me. It's
why would you do that to yourself? Why are you so mean to yourself?
Listen, this is my skill. I spend so much time and a lot of what is in Next Stop and a lot of what it was in like the first campaign to join the party was my frustration at jobs that didn't let me like do the thing that I was good at. This is a very much, and I describe this like a Dungeons and Dragons thing now. I'm like, hey, you wouldn't make your cleric run in and try to like shoot someone with a bow and arrow. Like you wouldn't make your rogue like try to take like a bunch of hits from an ogre, right? People have skills and they should be allowed to do the skills. And it's not that I didn't have people around who could help me write. Like obviously if I wanted to co-write this with like Julia Schifini, I could have. But I'm just like, this is the thing that I'm going to do. I'm going to write this thing and it's going to be my job. And like, I'm going to own it and then bring it to other people to do the things to do it. And that's how well, like I work with Amanda McLaughlin, our CEO of Multitude, and with Brandon Grugel, the Brandon of previous name, who was our like, who directed Next Stop and did all the post-production. Is like, it's my job to make the thing and then Amanda's going to sell it and sell ads on it and and figure out how to like send emails and market it. And Brandon is going to like make it sound really good. And that's the way that like the three of us really work together. And I really put that on my back. And like I said, it's like I had this vision and I want to execute it. And like, honestly, and I don't want to make you three jealous. Like I wrote this I was freelancing. Like this was before we even had the office. Like I was Multitude full time, but I didn't have a place to do it. I would just go to Little Skips in Bushwick and I would write, and I wrote these 10 scripts in like a month. I had rough drafts, 10 scripts in like a month, because I'm like, I want to do this and I want to write it. And I would put on Phoebe Bridges cover of Friday I'm in Love.
Like, amazing.
Again, and just listen to it and just write it.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about what happens when you're sitting there a Little Skips, you've got like, you know, Friday I'm in Love, it's pumping, it's blaring, you've got like, you know, nice 4-hour block. Where do you begin with kind of putting together an episode? Sort of what comes first? Is it sort of that, oh, I remember kind of this larger than life thing, like those roommate interviews, and you kind of begin with the situation? Or kind of, yeah, like how does an episode of Next Stop happen?
You know, it's funny. I got a lot of this from playing Dungeons and Dragons. Being a dungeon master has helped me out immensely, because an arc of Dungeons and Dragons is like, I need to hit these plot points, but I don't know necessarily how I'm going to get there. So I tried to summarize like the three main character arcs. I'm like, okay, Cam, he wants to do more in his job, but maybe or maybe not, is it going to happen for him? Like, Allie is a bartender and she has to deal with all this stuff and her weird sleep schedule and like being emotionally fulfilled. And Samuel moves to New York City and he's kind of like a weirdo. And like, is the city going to beat him down in this way? So I'm like, I want to hit these plot points. And then I would summarize, and then I knew it was going to be 10 episodes. I really like knowing the time frame. That's like a thing for me. Like, I like being a short order cook. I'm like, I need to know my window of my trajectory. Like I need to know the brief. This is very like baking show of me. Is like, I need to know the brief and I'm gonna nail it, and there's no soggy bottoms, you know?
Right.
So I'm like, there's 10 episodes and I need to make like jokes in all of these and has to be like kind of a silly situation. So I summarized them. I'm like, oh, I kind of want this to happen. I kind of want this to happen. And I wrote up those summaries and then I just started writing and like I kind of filled in. I'm like, OK, what scenes need to happen to get there? And this is the Dungeons and Dragons of it all, because I'm a dungeon master. I'm like, I need to lay out the original premise and then my players will go do the thing. The characters right. will execute. But I'm like, oh, well, I control the characters, so I know what they're going to do. I'm like, OK, in this first episode, it's like Jillian gets engaged. And then how do people respond to that? It's like, well, Allie probably, because she is this kind of person, like she's the one who got designated to take photos of the engagement. So she's going to do that. And Cam is just like so unaware. There's no way that he figured that out. And he's probably incredibly surprised. And then you build jokes around that. And then I knew that Jillian was going to move out and then we're going to have to deal with that. So it's very cause and effect. And then what is what does that effect cause? And then what is the effect of that? And then what is the cause and effect? And then slowly I get to that ending point where in my summary that I wrote for episode one. And then I just went from there.
Nice.
Is that not what people do? Like, I don't know. I didn't really talk to anybody.
It's what you do. And that's what's most important.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm going to remember that.
Like, honestly, we don't know what the fuck we're doing.
No, it is just like one constant, white knuckled sensation of fear just over and over again. That's my writing process anyway. Like, that's how I do it.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. I do say that it's not like I did this. I'm not like fucking Aaron Sorkin who just like drops a script and then people need to deal with it. Like I still needed people that work with me. Like I needed to bounce these or at least show them to like Amanda and Brandon and Julia.
Of course.
And then like we had a writing consultant come in and help me out because I really don't like looking at my stuff when I write it. But so I need people.
Oh,
to,
it's
like,
brutal.
Things. Like, but I want people to give me edits. Like, I love edits. Like, I love track changes. Like, it's my shit. But so I need someone to go do that and, like, fix all my typos and stuff.
Right.
Oh, that's interesting.
But, like, I'd rather have that I can respond to questions. Like, I can say yes or no. But, like, I don't even like going back and rereading it until, I have a wide breath. So, like, I need people to go in there.
Oh, see, I'm the exact opposite way. I don't like hearing, the finished product, like, good people have worked on and made good. But I'm fine to go back in and just be like, was I high? What was this? That comma does not work where it is.
Well, no, I think it's the opposite. It's like, I don't like knowing that people are reading it, but I like knowing that people have read it and have comments.
Gotcha. I totally get that.
Like, during our auditions, I tried to, like, I was there just in case they needed me to I don't know, respond to actors or stuff. So during our callbacks, when everyone came in, I was like, oh no, I can't deal with this. So I just listened to pop punk as loud as possible for hours because I could not hear actors reading my lines.
Yeah.
It freaked me out so much.
So this is where I'm curious, like what did the sort of collaboration look like? Like I'm curious where you handed over the keys and how the teamwork made the dream work.
Okay, so I wrote all of them, and then Amanda and Brandon and lots of people gave me comments back, and we hired a script consultant, Tavi, who's amazing, and she's a writer on Raven's Home, so she like actually understands like the kind of humor and big jokes that I was mm-hmm. writing about.
And that's how you found her, was being a fan of that show.
So, I don't remember. I think she wrote for...
I see.
And that's how we found her. She's just amazing. So then slowly, like we had these finished scripts and it got combed over a lot. And then finally I had to give them to Brandon to give to the actors. And like, I was there during the recording.
I mean,
Zach, you saw me there. I was like, I was around, but like, it was more like I needed to like fill in things if there were holes. Like, again, there was I like being a short order person. I'm like, hey, can you write a page or a new scene because this isn't working? And I'm like, yeah. And I wrote it in 30 minutes and I gave it to them. And like, that's something that makes me feel useful, even though like the script is out of my hands.
So you didn't want to direct.
I don't know if I would have been able to. I think that I would have been too close to it as a writer. I think that like writer directors in all things. What did I watch? That was a writer director thing. I watched Boiler Room. Have you guys seen that?
No. What is that?
It's it's from 2000. It's Giovanni Ribisi joins like a chop shop brokerage firm, and Vin Diesel is in it inexplicably
as a director.
It's just like,
I'm kidding.
Yeah, he was a dog. And you could tell that, like, there were some things that they very, very focused on. But because he was the writer director, you know that someone didn't tell him to, like, cut this entire scene. Mm-hmm. It's like, at some point, I need people to be honest with me and tell me.
Right. The self-indulgent factor.
I think I would have told the actors. Yeah. Yeah. And like in audio fiction, I feel like the writer is the one like doing a lot of lifting because it is just like all dialogue. So it's like, I did all this, like someone else take it from me. And I think Brandon ended up doing that. And he also got really close to it because he directed it. And then he did all the post-production. So like, he's already choosing takes while he's doing it in his brain, which I think,
and
only
it sounds fucking amazing.
It sounds so fucking good. So like, we also gave note. We give Julia and I give notes to Brandon. Like, he gives us rough cuts, and then we are like, "Oh, can you turn this up? I can't hear this joke. Is there another take of this?" Blah blah blah. Because I'm preserving it. Like, I'm trying to preserve the dialogue, but Brandon is the one who's like trying to make it sound good. And that was a big deal for us.
So I kind of want to ask you about like the 21st century of it all, because I, you know, when I started listening and heard the combination Catholic Church and Pizza Hut joke, I knew that I was going to be taken care of, but also that like it rooted me very much in a time and in a place. That time kind of being now-ish. So like, how important to you was it that it was like the late teens New York City and that the humor would flow from there, as opposed to sitcoms that are, you know, kind of more like you were saying earlier, amorphous and could kind of be any place, anytime?
I think you can't avoid the time frame of everything. Like, let's talk about Friends. Like, how did they have an apartment like that? So much revolves around, so many jokes revolve around the fact that like there are payphones. Like, do you remember there was an episode in the first season where Chandler gets stuck in a bank with a model and he can only talk like on a shitty cell phone or a payphone because of a blackout? And like, that's a very like sitcoms are inherently tied to when they are written and when they are made. So like the reference point of that, I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to make the jokes that I find are funny now. And like, people will find it like over the next few years. Like, you know, things age really poorly. Like, I don't get half of the jokes in Frasier because they're making obscure references to like whatever. But like, that's okay. I think the 21st century-ness of it is one, acknowledging the way that communication happens. So we have a lot of texting. And I think that it's really, it doesn't really happen until the next 102. There's a lot of texting. And because that's the way that people communicate, like that's how friends communicate. And I think that we do a really good job communicating through audio how texting works and the difference between texting and emojis and how you would speak out loud. The other 21st century bit of it is like, you know, Friends is incredibly problematic, and so is How I Met Your Mother.
That's kind of what I was getting
at. Yeah, like, that's the other thing. It's like, I don't want to punch down. I really don't. It doesn't fascinate me at all. That's also why I like the Fast and Furious and, like, John Wick. It's like, it's an action movie, and it gives me the action movie stuff, but it's like, oh, wow, there's no damsel in distress, and, like, there's not that many boobs, and, like, it's a multicultural cast of people, you know? Because that's how, like, people's lives work. And that's what we were really trying to capture here is like, I don't want to make jokes about people punching down because it's not fun for me as a like someone who wants to laugh in 2020. Like, I don't want to cringe around it. And I know it was funny to be like to talk about gay panic and to make fun of people's weight in like the 90s. Like, congratulations, writers of Friends. You got me. But like, I'm making a sitcom in 2020 and I want to do something different.
I think we maybe have time for one last question. And kind of pinging off of that, I'm curious what thoughts you have about what writing an audio sitcom. And like Brandon said on that fabled day, there aren't a lot of them around. What are your thoughts on what makes something specifically a good audio joke or sort of about like writing comedy for the ears and maybe how that might be different in terms of writing comedy for, say, a movie or a television show? Have you kind of like run into any audio specific issues in your humor for the show?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I thought you were gonna, I thought I had to be like nice to you and be like, hey, why didn't you set it in space? And I'm like, I think that, oh man, I think these two things tie together. Because one, I think when fiction is expanding and growing, people are like, wow, I can go anywhere. So I'm going to have magic and I'm going to have space and I'm going to have aliens and I'm going to have like very capital E evil. And like, that's good. And I'm glad it exists because, you know, I run a Dungeons and Dragons game. Like, you know that I give a shit about all that stuff. But at the same time, I wanted to consume something that was kind of like about my life in so many ways. Like the thing that I was trying to get at a year ago was like, these are issues that I'm having and I can laugh at them, but I don't want to move too far away from them. Like mm-hmm. we learn in the second episode that Cam works at Average Bear, which is a like a blog titan, like BuzzFeed equivalent. But of course, like I want to explore all of what it means to work at a media company, not like make fun of it like in 2013 and 2014, but like laha lists. But it's like having a job like that where you need someone to acknowledge that you're good and that you did a good job for you to get like internet famous, in both like either the audience validates you or your bosses validate you, and like you don't get that validation, like that's hard and it's, you don't know what to do.
Yeah,
so I wanted to work in that space very much so, and really exploring like the real life, the slice of lifeness, because like we can still do podcast stuff, but we are making it sound like a city that you wish existed, because it is an amalgam of a few different cities like New York and Chicago and Nashville and Boston, and really trying to capture as many of those soundscapes as possible. But I'm going to answer your original question. Writing a sitcom for podcast is still like a very specific thing to do. Like I didn't write a TV script and then be like, oh, can I smush this into a microphone? Like I wrote audio jokes. Like, yeah. I think I was inspired by Sorkin in so many ways that, like, the jokes are about the things people say. Or, like, in 30 Rock, it's like, I'm going to have a lot of jokes per minute. Joke density is high. And, like, you're going to catch them or you're not going to catch them. And then you can re-listen to them. And, like, but things are still going to flow because it's very conversational. At the same mm-hmm. time, I can't do visual gags, but I can do audio gags, like, mm-hmm. things sounding funny. There's a part, we ended up creating a... like a garbage bag that had a nasty fish in it. And like we put oatmeal and liquid in a Ziploc bag and shook it around. And like that was a really funny sound, you know? Right. We also like experimented, like, what does it sound like when someone's on a microphone? What does it sound like when someone is being thrown out of a room or you slam the door on someone? Like those are still funny sounds that we can explore in the podcast world. And I think to your point, like, you are writing a sitcom for consuming it with your ears. So you want to like optimize the things that you can listen to and they're still funny.
Absolutely. Oh, I think that's a great way to think about it. That's awesome.
Thank you. Also, we used a binaural mic. So we were actually able to capture a lot of distance. The other thing that we did was that we wrote an entire resource, like this huge resource, like 9 parts about how to make a fiction podcast. And we're releasing it with Patreon. We're slowly dripping it out week by week. So if you want to learn how to do this stuff, you can. Like I wrote the first part was about how I wrote my script and like things to keep in mind when I was writing a fiction article. So like this is all out there for free. And you can learn about the things that we did and how hard it is to do.
You all listening should definitely check it out. Some real wisdom from some of the smartest people working in the field and the makers of one of the best new shows this year. Eric, congratulations on Next Stop being out. It's a really great show. Everyone should check it out. Where can people check it out? Where should people go to find your work?
Oh, man. Okay. Well, you can follow me at EL_Silvero. L_Silvero. That is my name. If I was a Lucha Libre wrestler, you can find me on Twitter. You can find all of my shows on Twitter. That's where we spend all of our time. But just listen to everywhere you can get your podcasts. Join the party, horse. What's your favorite Pokemon? And say something nice about you. And finally, Next Stop. Just put it into your podcast player. It's available everywhere.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I know that you need to run to make your next podcast recording session.
Yeah, I gotta talk about Pokemon. It's an important job, man.
You gotta do it.
Listen, someone has to do it. I don't want to call myself a hero, but I know that I am.
Thank you so much for being here. It is so much fun talking to you and hearing about your process, and we cannot wait for the rest of the season.
Of course. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. And please ask me. I want people who know where they're talking about to ask me questions. I love talking about this shit. So always ask me questions. Thank you so much for you three having me on again.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valente. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist members, Rena Sarame and Jennifer Schneider. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. And if you love this show, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks.